Dumelang Thobela, hello, and welcome to the SR Cabinet, your go-to weekly news wrap-up. My name is Gwena Mashole. As always, I'm your lovely host. But today, unfortunately, I am not joined by my co-hosts, Nandine Tini and Herman Malloy. They are currently out busy in the field. But we are switching things up a bit. We have two youths of the day joining us today. And as usual, new week, same energy. So I'm joined by Masego Letswalo as well as Amogelang Aisha Ramatena. Can you guys please introduce yourselves? We'll say hi.
Hi, I'm Aisha.
Hi, I'm Masego.
Great, guys. New week, same energy. We're bringing you the top stories, sharp analysts, and a few surprises along the way. Stay tuned as we break it all down. Now, let's get right into it. So the first thing on the list, Minister in Presidency, Kumbuzo Ntshavheni, was speaking yesterday, basically giving an update on the cabinet meeting. And one of the things that she spoke about was obviously the 49 Afrikaners who went to America on Sunday. So essentially, Kumbuzo was basically saying that there is no genocide in South Africa. She went on to explain that if anything, South Africa is a very united and diverse country. She even went on to criticize your AfriForum and your Solidarity, saying that they even have a difficult task themselves, convincing white South Africans about this existence of a genocide. Let's take a listen to that clip.
What are they called? The triggers. Refugees, from citizens to refugees. It's not our job to be briefing on when they are moving. You must go to Mr. Kali Krillen's AfriForum and Solidarity and that grouping for those updates. Our job is to make sure when they leave, they don't leave any debt, they don't leave any crime. In the country, and we all know that the reasons that they are leaving are not true. As cabinet, we express the view that there is no refuge. They do not meet the criteria for refugee status. There is no violence against farmers. And actually, you must also go into that list and check how many of those people are actually farmers, because the argument is that there is genocide against white farmers in South Africa. Somebody has to be committed. He has a problem of explaining the genocide, and we wonder what they will say to the American administration when they do not meet the thousands and thousands of Afrikaner farmers to leave South Africa, and what they will be saying. In fact, they have a difficult task of convening white South Africans about the existence of a genocide. And I think since they claimed that there is a genocide, falsely claimed that there is genocide in South Africa. White South Africans have come in large numbers to show they are part of South Africa. What's the new dances that they're doing in the Amapiano? What are they called? I'm showing my age now. I'm exposing my age. Have you seen how many of those dances are very inclusive? We are now seeing a very united, non-racial, but diverse South Africa. So we must continue in that momentum, and we'll clarify that to the administration. In terms of our expectation, we are not going to the US on our own. We have been invited by President Trump. He is the one who made the public announcement that he is going to meet with us next week. So there is no one who invites a guest to mistreat them. So we are expecting the highest level of decorum and necessary protocols to be accorded. It doesn't mean we'll agree in all matters, we'll differ, but we believe that our relationship with the US is mutually beneficial. There are more than 600 US companies here in the country.
So now moving on, obviously, Ntshavheni Base goes on to say that let's say over the years has seen nothing but a diversity of people who are growing to basically embrace their country. She even makes an example of referencing TikToks made by white South Africans who are dancing to Amapiano music. So guys, as the youth, are you guys impressed by white people dancing to Amapiano music? I'm going to start with Masego. You go first, my dear.
Are you asking if we're impressed by white people dancing to Amapiano?
Yes, because it seems as if Ntshavheni is saying that it's an achievement She's labeling that as a benchmark of an achievement.
To be quite honest, not really. I don't think it's anything of note. I mean, since back then, Kabo Mandoza, they've been dancing to Yonka Lagatas. So them dancing to Amapiano now is nothing of note to say impressive. It is something that worth mentioning when white people are saying there's genocide in South Africa, yet we have white people in South Africa that are dancing and we are united through music or whatever else, sports, you name it, we're united through those things. It is worth mentioning, I think, but is it impressive? I don't think so. It's been done since way back in 2010. We're dancing together to the Waka Waka song. I don't think it's anything of note, to be quite honest.
Yeah. Aisha, what are your thoughts on that?
I think I will agree with Masiho on this. Like, dancing is a skill at the end of the day. So for you're dancing to a song that I think some people might think that it's like cultural appropriation or something like that. But Black people dance to salsa as well. Black people dance to tango. Yeah. It's something worth noting. And that I don't really think so. Let them dance to
But now going forward, is it not a matter of, I think the way the minister is speaking, she's trying to say, make it seem that as at the end of the day, there is no genocide in the country. And I think we can all agree there is no genocide in the country. She even goes on to say the stats don't even prove the genocide of white South Africans in the country. And she says that, you know what, even those 49 Afrikaners, she even goes on to say, are those 49 Afrikaners even farmers? Have you guys seen the pictures of the 49 Afrikaners? Do you guys think they're farmers?
I honestly haven't seen the pictures of the 49 Afrikaners, but from what I'm hearing, it's just regular people, man. And to show that there's no such thing as genocide in South Africa, there's literally a place called Orania that is predominantly white people and white Afrikaner people living their best lives with their own educational system and currency. So all this that people are getting, it really does not make sense to me.
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't seen the picture of the 49 refugees, as they call them. I just quickly Googled them. These people look like tourists. They look like they're going on vacation somewhere. And I'm just now seeing the picture because I had not cared to look at the picture because we all know that there's no genocide in South Africa. I have heard of the farm killings. I do not know too much about it, but it's. I think genocide is such an over exaggeration of whatever the farm killing situation was. I don't know if it was one isolated incident and then Soma, it was over dramatized to be called genocide. I do think there is an aspect of over exaggeration and also misinformation that's getting to the US. So whatever or whoever is informing them that side of what's happening this side, there is over exaggeration and also just misinformed information as a whole.
And obviously we hope that when the president goes to meet with the US President Donald Trump, there is a clearance of all these confusions, because as Mshabeni says, at the end of the day, they are going there out of a courtesy because they received an invitation from Donald Trump. So they didn't reach out to him. He invited them and they're going there too, and they're expecting the meeting to be cordial and they do not expect things for them to be talked down to. She basically reiterates what Ramaphosa said, that they will not be bullied. What do you guys think about the sentiment that South Africa will not be bullied? Do you think at the end of the day that Ramaphosa is still on the right track as standing up to most of the countries? Masuka, I'll start with you this time.
I think, first of all, I do think the meeting, if it was going to happen at all, the meeting between the two presidents, it's long overdue because there have been so many things in the media said by the US president that affects South Africa. So the conversation, I do think, is long overdue. But at the very same time, because the things that are being said by the US president are just coming from misinformation, I do think Cyril should stand his ground. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, but no DNA, just RSA. So he must stand on business. If everything that is happening is because of misinformation and it's not based on fact, then Cyril should stand his ground. If we were in the wrong, or if genocide was actually a thing that's happening with the side on white people, then we could question why Cyril's standing on business. But there's, I think people that they're complaining about, So I do think he should stand his ground. And in him standing his ground, he's standing his ground on behalf of us. So if he doesn't stand his ground, or manke magwan.
Aisha, what are your thoughts?
Exactly what Masapo said. Like, what do you mean you're not standing on business regarding people bullying us? Because the United States has been bullying a lot of countries like over the years, not just politically but economically as well. And like, it's not nice to be honest. So if no one is going to stand for us, who's going to stand for us? Clearly, we had an issue with the ICC. South Africa was at the forefront, and other countries were basically against us, but we still went on. And it shows that Africa is showing that we have resilience. We're going to stand up to bullies, and we're not going to stand down if push comes to shove.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, guys, moving on. So I think we all know about the whole escapade with the withdrawal of the HIV/AIDS programs. So recently, obviously during Trump's, well, not even during, when Trump came in, he cut off a lot of programs, one of them being the USAID funds, particularly those that were going to the HIV studies within South Africa. And we all know how South Africa's been trying to kind of clamp down on HIV. So Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi, I think yesterday, said that the department will not allow years of progress made in the fight against HIV and AIDS to go up in smoke because the US decided to pull the funding plug. He said the withdrawal of the funding will not collapse the HIV programs in the country. Let's take a listen to that clip.
Ladies and gentlemen, we must put it categorically clear that under no circumstances will we allow this massive work performed over a period of more than a decade and a half to collapse and go up in smoke because President Trump has decided to do what he has done. If we do so, we'll have thrown massive investment in time, money, and human resources away. And at any rate, we don't want to go back to the period where death was the order of the day. And we want to believe that there is not a single South African who wishes for the country to return to that painful period.
So he went on to say that obviously the government was spending about 47 billion on the AIDS programs, which 7.5 billion was coming from PEPFAR, was from PEPFAR, and which the president's emergency plan for AIDS, this was the president's emergency plan for AIDS, a fund that was launched in 2003 to help fight AIDS in the country, such as SA. So essentially, at the end of the day, they're saying that we will still continue to support PEPFAR, we'll still continue to find funding for the HIV programs. And yes, obviously, he's saying that at the end of the day, the withdrawal is a big impact. And ever since, about 8,000 jobs have been lost. And people are still trying to get these programs and people are benefiting. So I think going forward, what are you guys' thoughts on just the overall aspect of now South Africa having to kind of now realize that, okay, we need to not rely on a lot of people, a lot of resources from the USA in regards to the fundings. But do you guys think that they will kind of close the gap? I mean, that's a lot of money. How can they deliver without global support? Masoko, let's go with you.
I don't know. This is all based on just my thinking. It's not anything that I've researched or anything. But one thing about our government, I think they have money, these people. I think money is definitely there. Maybe because I recently heard someone saying once a department is allocated a certain amount of money, that money is for that department. It can't be reallocated. I don't know how true that is, but money is definitely there. And also, I do think it's very irresponsible of us as a country, our government, to have solely relied on global support for a problem that's here to stay. HIV's been here since even before they knew what it actually was, when it was still called GRIDS or whatever it was called. It's been here and it's clearly here to stay. I think it's definitely irresponsible of our government to have still been fully reliant on external support. But as far as them closing the gap, I just think it's a matter of them actually wanting to and using their resources as best as possible. Like I said, I am of the belief that our government has money. They just are misusing it. That's what I think.
Aisha?
I think I'll touch on the financial aspects of it. South Africa is part of BRICS Plus, right? And for the longest time, we've been having countries like Russia and China supporting us economically. So if backlash from other countries like the USA, it shouldn't honestly affect us that much. We should have some funds that are going to assist us as a country. And maybe also put in policies in place that are going to assist us, like what the current president in Burkina Faso is doing. Decrease funding, decrease their payments, increase payments of general workers. Like, let there be a balance within the economy itself, and maybe those financial gaps may be filled in properly.
So guys, obviously now with that done, I think a lot of people are kind of still confused about HIV and AIDS and the programs and what it's being helped for. So one thing that Mutaledi also said was that most of the HIV and AIDS is found in young women, like really, really young, not even like your 40s or your 30s, but young kids below your age 25. And I remember in an interview that he was having with my colleague Jeanette Shabalala, he was saying that half of the time it's because these older men go for these young women, and it's like they want to spread it, and it's there's no type of safety measure. Do you guys think the concept of protection has been lost on the country or just on the youth? Aisha, let me start with you.
I think this whole thing, protection has not been discussed properly. When people do engage in sexual activities, they usually just aim to not get pregnant. And you aiming to not get pregnant doesn't mean you're saving yourself from STI. And even while using protection itself, you still need to make and take precautionary measures to assist you.
I'm just going to write on what she was saying about how a lot of the youth nowadays, right, when you think about sexual activity, you don't consider it, what you call them, STIs, STDs. All people think about is getting pregnant. That's all they think about. And I think that's in how they make the decision on whether to be safe in their sexual activity or not be safe. I do think, as far as the education system in South Africa, we are definitely taught about these things. I mean, I think it's probably our favorite topic in high school, because it's so, I don't know, it's almost taboo to talk about sex. So I do think the education system could probably do better in sex ed, in terms of the practicality. And because sometimes you see the thing for the first time at a clinic, and it's almost like you're ashamed to even take them, because they're free. They offer them for free in health facilities, in some government buildings. They're just there in the bathroom, you can take if you need it, right? So I do think maybe in our education system there could be a dedicated sex education program, whether it be physical, they're teaching the boys on how to use the condom, the ladies on how, because there are like the female condoms,
right?
So the ladies, we can put that. And also girls just need to know in general that you have to use this. It's not just for pregnancy. There's STIs, there's STDs. Because at the end of the day, the boy child might be educated. Because I know when we're learning about periods and stuff like that, sometimes the teachers will be like, okay, you know, the boys must leave the classroom and then the girls remain. I do think it's a class that should be held both for the girls, both for the boys, whether it's in unison or separately, but both genders must have this sex education. Because if one gender is not educated, then I think it's pointless. Because we must all be educated regarding this matter. That's what I think.
Okay, guys. So moving on. So Tshwane yesterday had its State of City address, and they said that they plan to use about 90 8 million of its budget to formalize 502 informal settlements across the city. And they want to allocate an additional 400 million to provide them with water and electricity. So essentially, Tuan wants to spend about 500 million to formalize city settlements. So now the deputy mayor, Eugene Mudisa, revealed this. And she said that the city about, obviously, like I said, they have 502 informal settlements, which many are built in unsafe environments and lack the bulk infrastructure needed to support basic services. So she went on to even give an example like Marry Me, which made headlines about a month ago, where four men were believed to be patrollers were attacked and killed while eight others were injured. And this is an informal settlement within Soshanguve. So we all know that informal settlements within the country are massive. I mean, last week we heard from your Joburg mayor, who said that in Cape Town, there's around 800 informal settlements, and in Joburg, there's around 300. So I think there's a definite need of more housing, more infrastructure to be put into the system. But I think for now, the only thing the cities or the municipalities can seem to do is play catch up with the informal settlements that are growing. So Aisha, on this topic of informal settlements, what do you think is the most important thing that the municipalities need to kind of focus on? Because even when they build these, when they formalize these for these settlements, sometimes they don't even put these support basic services like water and your electricity. What are your thoughts?
Not just water and electricity, actually. Normal, simple things like roads, places that don't have a recipe for disaster, because firstly, the planning is also going to be very unorganized and people are just going to do as they please. But I think the municipality can do what happened in one informal settlement that I can recall 5 or 4 years ago in Rustenburg. As soon as people started placing themselves in that place, the municipality did not let them even spend a month and to put in furniture and DSTV and all. They babalatile immediately, and they were just like, this is not a place to build. Apply for RDPs.
Yeah.
This is what you can do. But this place, it can't work, because if they do let them do whatever they want and have housing, unplanned settlements, we're going to end up having Tuane be like Soweto. I don't know if that sounds better or not, but it's going to be like people don't pay electricity at all. And at the end of the day, it's costing Eskom, it's costing the city power. And those people that are paying their dues that are suffering at the end of the day, because they have to pay more levy.
I think one of the most important things is just the I don't know what to call it, the opening up of land, so that land is available for people to occupy. Because I think we have a large influx of people coming into the country, and obviously, I'm talking about the people that are coming in the way they're supposed to come in, and we have numbers of these people, because we all are aware that there are people that come in illegally, right? So the people that come illegally, surely the Department of Home Affairs has numbers of these people that are coming in, knowing that they need to accommodate these people because they're allowing them into the country. So I think more land should be opened up for such people, and it should be cleared in time. Because I know sometimes land is, there's always like confusion about whether or not the land is legit to live on. Some people occupy land thinking it's legit. They start building jiggy-jiggy. Yeah. It takes 15 years for them to get water, to get electricity. So I do think more land should be opened up for people based on the numbers of people coming into the country. And also, Shem, giving birth, hey? We're just giving birth. Also, our population is just naturally going up. So we need more land to occupy these people.
Yeah, definitely true. So guys, moving on from Tuane, I think the next one is one that's kind of deeply emotional for some. So there's been a probe into the recent death of a doctor in KwaZulu-Natal. So recently a medical intern died while on duty, and his name is Dr. Alulutu Muthu Mazwi. And he was denied to be on leave by his line manager, and he collapsed and died on duty. This is according to the Public Servants Association, as well as the fact that there was these conversations or WhatsApp conversations circulating on social media, where in the conversation, people can see how Mazwi wrote to the doc, to his supervisor, stating that, "I am not feeling well today. Apologies for the inconvenience caused to the team." And the response from the alleged supervisor was that, You have seen the message in the group chat. I expect to see you on duty." And later on that Monday, this Monday, he proceeded to collapse while on duty and pass away. So the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Health said that they are investigating his death, as well as the employee and employer relations are following serious allegations. Apparently, many people took to social media to basically frustrate that this is not the first time that this particular hospital, Prince Mshiyeni Memorial Hospital in Umlazi, has been in the limelight for such allegations of ill treatment of staff members at the facility. So his family also went on to say that they are deeply hurt. Mazwi was diagnosed with diabetes over a year ago and has been battling with it and has been in pain since, to a point where even his mother had to drive him to hospital at some point. Well, had to drive him to work despite him being in pain. I think this is not the first time we've heard of instances where such things happen at public hospitals. We know that they are overworked. We know that they are understaffed. We know that there's no resources. But I don't think half of the time we understand what it means on these health workers. And obviously, most of us go into these public healths demanding for them to kind of give us the health that we need, and we call it a right. But we don't understand that what they go through behind closed doors. Aisha, let's take it to you. What are your thoughts on this matter?
I think my opinion on this is that no job is worth losing your life over. If your life does not want you to take leave, you are allowed to take that leave even without that person's permission. Because at the end of the day, it's against labor laws. And people should never overwork you to a point of you feeling like, "I'm on the verge of death." You know, at this point, the line manager is an accessory to murder, because I died on the job because of you basically avoiding the fact that I said, "I am not feeling well." It was written all. It's not like this person just decided, "Oh, I'm not going to work anymore." So
yeah
that investigation needs to
be,
and that person needs to face consequences.
Masako, what are your thoughts on this?
I think the bigger thing is knowing your rights as an employee. As much as you're an employee, you have rights, even in that situation. It doesn't matter if you're... I don't think it should matter whether or not your leave days are done. If you are simply not feeling well, and if you're somebody that's already diagnosed... I mean, this is a health facility. How is it? It is such a problem that somebody's calling in sick when they have a diagnosed condition. So I do think knowing your rights is first and foremost most important. It does clash with the fact that our employment rate, there is that fear that you are now defying your boss or your supervisor, and now you might lose. Knowing the unemployment rate in our country, there is that fear, but I think that fear should be countered by knowing your rights and knowing that you're in the right. If your supervisor is now firing you because you didn't come to work because you didn't feel well, as somebody that has a known diagnosis, I don't think it should be that much of a problem for you to stand your ground and know that you are in the right legally, you're in the right morally, not to mention, like Aisha said, no job is worth your life. If you are simply feeling well, then don't go to work. And now this I don't know if it's a lady or a man, this Mazwi person, like, man, this thing costed them their life. So I don't think it's worth it. I think also find out what is legally, what you are legally, you know, owed. Yes.
So guys, think quick take. So before we wrap up, I think, first of all, I think it's been a very great week for some Kaizer Chiefs supporters. So they ended a decade-long wait for this silverware by defeating Orlando Pirates 2-1 in the Nedbank Cup final. I think this was a victory for a lot of people. I think we all saw the social media posts. I mean, students taken to the streets, marching in jolliness. A lot of people kind of celebrating. And I think a lot of people on Mondays as well, going into work, there were a lot of people wearing the yellow attire. So I think this is a big achievement for Kaizer Chiefs, the biggest that they've ever had. So what are your guys' thoughts? Aisha, I know you're a big soccer fan. So what were your thoughts?
Firstly, Kaizer Chiefs deserves nothing. But after a long wait, I am actually on their side for once. They haven't been winning for a very long time. And they're a big team. I feel like everyone knows that when we were growing up, we kept on hearing this Orlando Pirates that Sundowns this, you know, and the Soweto Derby is something that trends like no one's business, and Kaizer Chiefs is part of that. So Orlando Pirates is basically very big, and the Nedbank Cup is a very big deal as well, because with them winning the league, that means that they might also get more funding within the team itself. So it's a win-win, bragging rights and also financial aspect of the soccer team itself. So yeah.
Masako.
Girl, when you start talking sports, I speak Chinese, but I do come from a family that is predominantly like Kaizer Chiefs supporters. So growing up, I had to be a Kaizer Chiefs supporter by force. We don't support Chiefs. When Chiefs is playing, you sit outside. So growing up, my uncle was the only Pirate supporter in the house. And then my sister also then became a Pirate supporter. So it's literally just the two of them against the whole family. But honestly, I'm one of those people that watch sports with that thing. I support whatever team wins, that's the team I support. And also sometimes I just pick the kids, whatever kids that they're wearing that I like, that's the team I choose. But I do know apparently Kaizer Chiefs hasn't won, I don't know if it's this specific cup or any cup at all, they haven't won in like a decade. So they deserve to celebrate, they deserve the kudos. I know my grandfather, he woke up the next morning, and like this whole week I think he's been wearing a Kaizer Chiefs shirt every day. So the supporters, Shem, they deserve the break. They deserve the break, because the truth of the matter is, sports definitely affects people's emotions. People have had bad days. Pirate supporters probably had like the worst week. I don't know. But yeah, man, kudos to you.
Oh, wow. Okay, guys, that's all for this week's news wrap. Please remember that you can find our latest podcast review and subscribe for free on Ayono FM, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasts. You can also follow us on all social media platforms at Sowetan Live. This podcast is a Times Live production, and our producer is Danny Buzo. Don't forget, you can also have a listen to our other podcasts, Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horns, Business Day Spotlight, The Indigenous Corner with Gogo Zipo, and Deeply Rooted. Thank you for tuning in. Join us again next week for more updates on the bigger stories from me, Gwena, and my special guests, Masego and Aisha. Thank you, and bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.